Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and it's great to be with you. Earlier this month, WBOI held Issues and Ales at Welch's Ale House. During one half of the event, WBOI News Director Rebecca Green led a panel of experts on the topic of interfaith dialogue in the city of churches. The panelists are Irene Paxia, Executive Director of Amani Family Services, Rabbi Paula Jane Winnig of the Congregation Achdut Veshalom, and Joseph Salem, a former Catholic high school theology teacher and a member of the steering committee of LIFT, Living Interfaith Together, a group planning a series of interreligious dialogues in 2020. Please enjoy the show.
I want to start real quick by telling you all that I am a confessed religious nerd, a church nerd. I have written about matters of faith and religion a number of times throughout my career. And so when Katie was like, oh, this is an opportunity, we can talk about this, I was like, yeah, we can do that. But the trick is, when you're talking about faith and interfaith dialogue, where are you starting from? So I want to give each of our panelists tonight, we have three very different panelists coming from very different and unique points of view. So I want to give them each a chance to introduce themselves and share with us, to kind of start us off, what this idea of interfaith dialogue means to them. So we'll start at the far end.
I was hoping you would start from Joe. Hi, my name is Irene Paxia, and I have the honor of serving as the executive director of a nonprofit organization in town called Amani Family Services. I also have the experience of being an immigrant from Italy. So I do not represent a specific religious group, and I'm not an expert on religion. I'm mostly maybe an expert on local community people that come from different countries that may or may not be Christian or may not be religious for that matter. So when it comes to, you asked about interfaith dialogue, I think that interfaith dialogue is, to me, the immigration process. It's the adjustment of people who resettle here from other countries, and they may or may not share the same religious background that the host country has. So that's what I see every day.
I'm Rabbi Paula Winnig. I'm the interim rabbi at Congregation Achdut Veshalom, which is now the only Jewish community in Fort Wayne. And I've participated in interfaith dialogue my entire life, since I've always been a member of a minority religion. Anytime religion comes up, it's always interfaith if I'm present, because I'm always the odd one out. True interfaith dialogue is about learning, about sharing, and about respect, and giving the dignity of belief to each faith group, and to allow each faith group to be exactly what it is, and be honest and be forthright in their beliefs and structures, to join together where we can, to support each other even if we don't agree, and to share a system of beliefs that our religions will make ourselves and our world better, because they'll teach us how to be better human beings.
My name is Joe Salem, and I was a theology teacher in a Catholic high school here in Fort Wayne. But my interest in this topic goes way before I was a teacher. I've had a very international outlook throughout my life. I've been fortunate enough to travel for work and for pleasure, and then to do something that I wasn't sure that I would ever get the chance to do, which was actually teach about my faith as a Catholic. But as part of that, I taught a class on ecumenism and interreligious dialogue, because I think it's important for us to recognize that just because we are people of faith doesn't mean that other people are necessarily going to agree with us. And it's important for us to recognize the validity of people's beliefs, and to not expect them to conform to our own beliefs, but we need to try to come to an understanding of what other people believe, if all we're going to do is try to proselytize and convert people to our beliefs. We're going to cut off discussion. We're never going to learn anything. So when Rebecca brought up the fact that, you know, religion is one of the topics we're not supposed to discuss, My response to that is, why not? Because we live in this great melting pot of America. In this place of all places, this is the place where we should be willing to discuss our beliefs and other people's beliefs and try to come to an understanding, if not agreement, at least an understanding of where people are coming from. And that's how we learn.
Thank you guys for giving us kind of a nice place to start from. We normally have a projector, and I had diligently put together some slides on some demographics and some facts, but as you can see, that it's not here, and that's fine, because our radio audience wouldn't hear it anyway, see it anyway. So I want to share with you just a couple things that kind of offer maybe some demographical perspective on where we were and where we are now. Fort Wayne's unofficial nickname as the City of Churches has been traced to the late 19th century, but no one is quite sure why. It is not matched by any unique data or any census information that would make it like, you know, we're the most religious city in America. But for whatever reason, we have that nickname, and because of our size, for about 100 years, many churches such as the Roman Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, and the Lutheran Church have made Fort Wayne their regional hub for their diocese and their denominations. So, according to the City of Fort Wayne, we have 360 houses of worship within the city, and that encompasses not only Christian churches, mosques, temples. We have a number of other religions that are represented. We are not by any stretch of the imagination a city just of churches. So according to census data, we're still demographically very monochromatic. We are 74% white. What is interesting to me too, we have First Nation representative, Native American representative, less than 0.2%, which given the history of this land where we are, is, I think it's rather telling. 26% of the city has identified in census data as being from German ancestry. 6% have identified as American, which I'm not sure what that means. But so we're a pretty typical Western American, like Western culture American city. And with that comes a very typical Western, predominantly Christian view of things. So when we talk about faith and practice, it's very easy, especially for those of us who are of the majority faith, to default to that. But we are changing in culture. So what are some things, and maybe this is a question best to you, about when people come here, what are some of the barriers that they find that are put in place by faith?
First of all, you know, everybody has a different experience. So even though I'm here to represent an organization that works with people who have come from different countries, it is true that it's an individual experience. Every person lives through their own resettlement or adjustment process in a unique way. So we all understand that. I can speak for myself, and I can speak for what I have observed. The process of coming from a different country requires you every day when you wake up to answer one single question. And that question is this my home? You know, it may be your home on paper. You may have lived longer in the host country than the country where you were born or raised. But literally every day you question whether you belong. So that is the same experience that I have. Many times you may hear people talking about culture shock. You may talk about, even people may hint to the idea of grief, you know, for what might be the emotional experience of people who have come from different countries and have left people and things behind. Some people came here as a choice, like in my case. They pursued personal decisions. They maybe got married and pursued a career, and everything looks a little different than if you were escaping war. But no matter what, there's something that happens where you try to establish belonging. One of the first experiences when you come, obviously, in any country when you arrive, is values. It's religion. In this particular area, there is definitely an experience that it's pretty pervasive of majority Christian belief and majority Christian experiences. I come from a perspective personally that, you know, I tried to find more reasons to be positive than to criticize. So I found that many times religion is a reason for dialogue, is a reason for many people to embrace very positive values of connectivity and generosity. And that's overwhelmingly the case. Just at times, religion can become a barrier, you know, and that has been the case for perhaps moments where I have observed an intention to exclude people based on religion, meaning either you belong here, maybe you partake to the values and the rituals that I have, or, you know, you're less than, or I still have to work on you. So there is oftentimes prayer used, for instance, in public meetings that is sort of assumed to be welcomed. Like I said, over time, especially in these times, I try to find more opportunities for embracing connectivity and positivity. So I'm not personally very disturbed by activities that can create barriers, but I can tell you it may be emotionally perceived, may not be perceived positively depending on where somebody is on the continuum of adjustment. And finally, when you look at the history of our services and social services in this community, many of the same wonderful social agencies that provide very critical services, maybe it could be shelter for homeless people, any of the many different services that are very critical needed, many times require belonging to to Christian faith. So that could create a barrier that may be perceived at times, or maybe very real.
Is there anything else that either of you would like to add to that or build on that? Feel free to jump in.
So I was just going to mention, I'm the granddaughter of four immigrants to the United States, all of whom came here seeking refuge because if they stayed where they were either going to be killed or persecuted, maybe kept alive, but certainly not able to live freely. They came to America because it was, as they said in Yiddish, the golden of Medina, the golden state, because America was going to give them freedom of religion, freedom of choice. They came here, my parents were born here, and my parents and I as well suffered from anti-Semitic incidents, people who teased us, who as a child literally looked for horns on my head. I wasn't allowed to play with certain people because of my faith, and I grew up in a small town where all of the activities that were socially done for children were all done through the churches. So I wouldn't say that it was dramatically isolating, but it was certainly isolating as a child. And those kinds of experiences still happen today, where there's youth programs and activities that people are very involved in their churches. And if for any reason you're not part of their faith, or you choose not to have a faith altogether, your children and your social life may be curtailed by it. And even generations later, that's still the case. I just was reading a few days ago, there's a Facebook group for a group of women, they call them the Salam Shalom Sisterhood, which is a group of Muslim and Jewish women who have been meeting now for 6 years in different places across the United States. And last week, one of the Muslim women put a question up about what she should do for her child in school, because they're starting to talk about letters to Santa and participating in photographs with Santa to make Christmas greetings for their families, all done through public schools. And those kinds of activities are prevalent and are alienating to people of minority religions.
It feels like in many ways we were starting to open up culturally and be more accepting, and then within the last 10 years or so, there's been a bit of a reaction to that and a reactionary behavior to that, and that it's, we don't need to be inclusive, we don't need to be accepting or even offering other options. Is that something, and maybe this is for Joe, that you've observed here in town? I know that you've worked kind of to bring people together over these dialogues.
Mm-hmm. I guess I go back to, I'm involved in several organizations that, you know, are providing services within the community, whether it's mental health services or, you know, or other things. And I've attended several support groups based around those kinds of activities. And inevitably what happens is somebody new comes in, and, you know, and these are not religious organizations who are providing these support groups or services to people. But someone will come in and they'll ask either at the beginning or end of the meeting, are we going to pray? And my response to that is usually, what prayer would you have us use? Because you don't know if I'm Catholic, if I'm Christian, if I'm Jewish, if I'm Baha'i, if I'm Sikh, if I'm Muslim. So if you want to pray, and you're probably going to pray to Jesus, if I'm not of a similar faith, what am I supposed to do while you're praying? We tend to think, as this being a predominantly Christian community, we tend to think that everybody is like us, and that if we're going to pray, that everybody prays like us. And if you're attending something to get information or help, and then you're expected to pray, you've got to question whether or not you're even welcome there.
In our earlier conversations about this conversation, Rabbi Paula, you mentioned something about, is there even a place in communities where there is a deep tradition of faith for those who don't have faith or who are, and I don't even like to use the word unchurched, because from my own background, that refers to a very specific person in need of a very specific thing. But I think you might have used that word. So could you expand on that a little bit?
So I chose to use the term unchurched because we were talking about being the city of churches. Mm-hmm. And as somebody for whom that word doesn't resonate, right, it immediately was alienating and off-putting and made me feel like I don't belong. And I'm a white cisgender woman who floats through society on a daily basis without people looking askance at me, except for the fact that I'm an old white woman, and get treated interestingly as an older white woman. And I hear those words and I immediately cringe. Now transfer that to people who are of color, people who go through the day constantly feeling ill at ease because they're waiting for the next time someone's going to say something or do something or in some way look at them in a different way because of their skin color, much less if somebody's sexual orientation or gender identity comes into the picture. And all of a sudden, you don't feel comfortable. And rather than feeling like, oh, it's a great faith community and I can really find myself in this, you instead feel completely separate and unwelcome in that kind of a framework. And that's why words matter a lot. And I'm always really happy to hear that there's initiative to perhaps change the name from City of Churches, because it would be a lot more welcoming. Frankly, though, as a purist on these matters, I'm not certain even a city of faith should be the name for a city, because there are people who don't choose to have a religious identity or a faith community, and they should be comfortable as well.
Regarding that kind of that level of comfort and kind of going back to some of your work with refugees, we are blessed in this community, and I realize that's a very religious sounding word, but we are blessed in this community because we have a significant portion of our culture, of our community, that is coming from other places and has come here with other faiths and other practices. We have a Sikh temple. We have at least one or two Buddhist temples. We have a number of Burmese, and they practice a number of different faiths. And we have Unitarian houses of worship and gathering. We have a really diverse smorgasbord, and I don't want to trivialize it by using that word, but this place where people can connect and find community. How do you connect people to that, and what can the people in those communities or the people in other faith traditions do to help kind of and again, it's another faith word, but shepherd people to a house of worship or a way to connect to the community.
So the house of worship is usually one of the very first connections that refugees make or immigrants when they arrive. If religion was a factor in the place where they are from, they typically do look for guidance, advice, support from the community. In fact, having a presence in the city, as we do here, of diverse places of worship is one of the factors that could lead a person to feel more at comfort. So inevitably, when we work with families who are from different countries, we oftentimes negotiate part of the family case with either a priest, a pastor, sometimes it could be a Buddhist monk. In fact, there are, I think, maybe 6 Buddhist temples, and many of them you won't even recognize because they just look like homes. So you may have to knock at the door. You may see a few shoes at, outside the door, so you know they're probably a temple. But many of those same places of worship for the refugees in particular are ethnicity and language specific. So there is, for instance, one Hmong Buddhist temple with the Hmong minority that the Hmong community will go to as, you know, compared to another Buddhist temple, the Vietnamese. So they do tend to make the connections. They do tend to, you know, find and seek those connections. Oftentimes, immigrants and refugees come as a result of joining family members who already are connected, so we typically don't have a role in trying to connect them. However, at times we do find a person who is completely isolated. So one of the many questions that we could have is, you know, what would you like to find? And or they come to us and say, do you know somebody that speaks such and such language or is from that religion? And so we definitely make that connection. Again, that can be of much comfort in some ways. It also sometimes gets in the way if it's not a you know, adjustment. Part of the adjustment is to understand, learn the values and even the laws of the country in the United States. And when people have the opportunity to learn about the laws in the United States, they have also a better chance to, and the values in the United States also have a better chance to understand what might be some permissible activities, some less permissible, or you know, what are, for instance, the just to be specific and close here, we talk about issues of disciplining child or issues of marriage or divorce. Again, religion can be comfort, can also be a barrier. And I think that's true probably for anybody who's even from America.
Rabbi, you had mentioned earlier that the temple is now the only congregation, Jewish congregation in the area. And I know that there's been some consolidation. And I think there's probably been other kinds of consolidation. I was thinking while she was talking and thinking of that, you know, Lutherans now go to non-denominational churches. There's all these kind of different things that change. And I know those are different, but I kind of want to touch base with you and then Joe about some of the changes in the Fort Wayne religious community and ways that that can help us learn to talk about faith or ways that maybe openings that it leads.
So the Jewish community in Fort Wayne has been an organized religious community since 1848.
Very long time.
We are the longest existing synagogue in all of Indiana. And we're still pretty early on the map for all of the Midwest in general. So that's a pretty long and very exciting history. We started out as an immigrant group, really, to help bury the dead and take care of the sick in the community. That was the original name. It became Congregation Achdut V'Shalom in 1861. So we have a long story history. Achdut V'Shalom means unity and peace, and that was the goal. Throughout the years, there were some squabbles in the community over what type of services they should have, what type of religious practices they should follow. So there were synagogues that broke away, and as of August 1st, we became one community again, which is good news on the one hand, and it's bad news on the other, because it means that our community is shrinking, and we could no longer support 2 congregations. And that's one of the things. On the one hand, it's a wonderful opportunity. On the other hand, it means our population is struggling here. Most of the younger Jews who are raised here leave to go to other cities and communities where they could perhaps have a more active Jewish life, or just because their professions take them to other places. And the less people we have, the fewer people who want to come here, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy over the size and the breadth of the community. It's an opportunity for us to re-engage in conversations about our own practices and how we can have one community, and on the other hand, it's sad because it means that there's no variety. Somebody gets mad at us, they have no other place to go. You know, whatever our issues are, that's the way it's going to be magnified. So we're hoping that this merger between the congregations and will help us still be unified and at peace. And we hope that as one community, we can relate to the other faiths in the community and Fort Wayne at large in a stronger, unified fashion. So there's lots of potential here, but it's all in a framework of the fact that our population here is likely to keep diminishing.
Joe, you've been here a long time, and you've been around, like you've taught about religion. I kind of want to just get your observation on the roles of the more, I guess, the churches in the community and what's going on with regards to because even in those communities, the Christian communities, you have a very distinct split between progressive congregations and conservative congregations, and, you know, forget interfaith dialogue. Intrafaith dialogue, I think, here is probably difficult sometimes.
It can be. I mean, you know, I come from a background of the Catholic Church, and, you know, you can go to certain areas of the town where, you know, people are very conservative, and other areas of town where there's a more liberal Catholic theology. Certain churches might be more liberal than others. And the same can be said among, you know, Lutherans, Methodists, you know, what other evangelicals, what other mainline churches you want to talk about. And I guess what I see is, you know, we tend to go to a place where, to use Christian terms, I guess, where we talk about apologetics versus ecumenism. In other words, our apologetics is defending the faith. Are we going to defend, am I going to defend what I believe against what you believe, even though most of what we believe is the same? Or am I going to be an ecumenist, which is trying to promote unity among people of differing Christian beliefs? We tend to gravitate, and we tend to start off with, I'm right and you're wrong. As a Catholic, I hear people say, you know, the Catholic Church has the fullness of truth and faith. Well, as soon as I say that to a Lutheran or a Methodist or an evangelical, I've cut off discussion, because what I'm saying is, if I have the truth, fullness of truth and faith, then you don't.
I was thinking, and you and I talked about this a year ago, then Attorney General Jeff Sessions came to town and used scripture to justify family separation. That was when everybody became aware that this was going on. And Bishop Rhodes spoke out fairly forcefully about this issue. There seems to be places right now in a lot of these issues, and it back to that kind of liberal and progressive thing where faith cuts very strongly for one group of people and says this, and faith tells another group of people the exact opposite. And it doesn't even have to be Christian faith, or it can be any faith. I think we find our positions justified in many ways. That polarization in our culture and then becomes polarizations in our faith communities. Certain churches will not interact with Rabbi Winnick's congregation for a variety of reasons. Certain congregations in town will not assist Amani necessarily. So how do people of faith who may be in churches or congregations that are resistant to that work open those dialogues where they can present compassion and connection from their congregation to the people. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but...
I think there's a huge difference between people who use faith as their text for how they live their lives and people who use faith as the pretext for how they live their lives. And I have to be honest, I don't understand a faith community that doesn't have compassion as its deepest rooted belief. If we're not compassionate, then whose message are we carrying forth? Not a single faith community I have ever met has anything but the teaching of goodness, kindness, love, mercy, compassion as essential components of their faith. And there's a meme going around on the internet, you know, if your religion teaches hate, find a new one. Because religion isn't about teaching hate. So people who use religious teachings to be hateful are just doing that. They're using and abusing the beauty of our faith traditions for an end that is not religious in its intent at all. And certainly when it comes down to issues like families and caring for children, I don't, again, understand a faith tradition that would support children being ripped away from their parents unless their parents were being abusive to them.
Just to follow up on that, you know, I go back to, you know, several years ago, might have even been a decade or more ago, there was a movement in this country that federal government and state governments were saying, you can't give services to people who are undocumented. And I remember this very clearly. You know, our bishop at the time was Bishop John Darcy, and he came out very forcefully and said, we don't ask people where they're from or if they have papers if they need help. We help people because they need help. And I think what the rabbi's saying goes along with that. You know, we don't discriminate on people just because of where they're from or, you know, how they got here. If you love and serve people, then you love and serve all people. You don't ask them for qualifications before you render them services or help or assistance or love.
It has become more and more difficult for immigrants and refugees to voice any type of criticism. In the environment in which we live, it is a very dangerous territory to go to. At Amani, we decide to navigate that environment that perhaps wants to see hate and ignorance with, we do what we can for every family. We don't try to attract, you know, the eyes of those who don't want to see us. It has been so difficult that, you know, myself and others I know have been the target of unfortunate, you know, communication, sometimes hearing things like, you know, if you don't like it here, just go away. It is very, 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 very difficult for either us who are immigrants and refugees or us who work closely to immigrants and refugees to voice what the same things that I've heard. So I've personally learned to navigate with love and, again, seeking connection and positivity. But it is overwhelmingly true that one of the, I think, realities that you observe when you come to America, and Fort Wayne being maybe one of the most representative Midwest areas of America, is that there is sometimes a very gray, difficult, there's a very fine line between being pro-America and being Christian. Sometimes the two things are kind of one and the same, so you can... Sometimes it's hard to say you're one without being the other. So that is the reality. Even, you know, you can see that's the background of America. It's on car plates, it's on dollar, it's everywhere. And, you know, I come from a place where state and church are divided. Believe it or not, Italy is a little bit more division between state and church. So for me personally, for my experience, that was one of the things I had to observe and adjust to. When I have the opportunity to claim my own identity, when I can, you know, choose a different plate, for instance, I do. And not because I'm not Christian, by the way, I was raised Catholic. But because I do like the freedom of making the choice and not the freedom of being assumed one, to be one or the other. And like I was saying earlier, what we don't realize sometimes is, so there is generosity, there is honesty and willingness to help. And that's just so amazing. That is really, this is a really rich community when it comes to help. What sometimes happens is that that comes with strings. And those strings are, you know, they're a choice. And with that choice come consequences. And so that might be excluding people who need help based on where they're from, how they were raised, and, you know, whether religion is a priority to them or not based on the fact of whether they have food to eat. So I think that religion sometimes is used, and I personally don't like that because I like to find help for my clients, whether they are Buddhist, Muslim, or Christian. So I want to make them always very aware if any of the help that is provided by the community comes with strings.
We're going to open it up right now for some questions. If anybody here has questions, you can come to the microphone. If you want to do so via Twitter, you can tweet at us using the hashtag #IssuesAils, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook Live post. If we'll give you just a couple seconds. If you don't, I have some more questions because I always have questions.
Thank you, panelists, for talking about faith and in our city. I often think of faith and tradition as very intertwined, and I think that a lot of what's happening in our community is with the fear that comes from seeing a lot of the traditions maybe encroached upon by outside communities coming in. I see that fear actually then spreading to the communities that are coming in, and maybe they also become afraid. Is there any conversations or dialogues that are happening within the community, or is there any organizations that are creating these dialogues or bringing people in?
I'm glad you brought that up, and you know, we haven't even had this conversation yet, but the gentleman that just spoke, I just met tonight, and he doesn't know this, but we have, there's a new group, and I know there are groups that have tried to do interreligious dialogue in the past in Fort Wayne, but there's a new group called LIFT Fort Wayne. LIFT is Living Interfaith Together. It's sprung out of a group that I'm involved in around another community organization that I'm involved in, but this has kind of taken on a life of its own. And we are scheduling a series of interreligious dialogues to begin next spring. We are going to be doing that. We've talked to WBOI about assisting us in that and hopefully maybe even presenting those over the air after recording them. And we're going to be doing it at Sweetwater. And we're hoping to get a larger and wider ranging audience than at least what I'm aware of has been done here in the past. And if any groups have done this or are doing this, I would appreciate it if they would contact me, because we want to incorporate as many people as possible. But we want to facilitate a dialogue between people, first on a larger, you know, formal level, but then to expand that out once we get a group of people to come to kind of take this into their homes or into their communities or neighborhoods. I guess the whole point of this is you can't learn about other people and appreciate what their beliefs and ideas are if you don't talk to them. It's easy to demonize people of different faiths or belief systems when you've never met them. But it's a lot harder to do that when you meet face to face, you share a meal, you sit down next to each other, like we're doing here, having a drink or a meal together. You know, breaking bread is a big part of almost every faith tradition. Literally, breaking bread, sitting down together and sharing together. And when you do that over food, a drink, having that interpersonal connection together helps you go beyond all of that other stuff out there that we tend to take in, the toxic stuff, that helps us from actually understanding people on a personal level and realizing that we're a lot more alike than we are different.
So I'm going to make a plug. There's actually a lovely group of interfaith clergy that meet regularly, And one of the things that the Clergy Association does every year is sponsor an interfaith Thanksgiving service, which we are hosting again at Congregation Achdut V'Shalom this year on November 26th. It'll be, I think we're up to 10 or 12 different religious organizations sponsoring the group. It's an interfaith group with Buddhists, Muslims, Christians, and Jews, and Christians of every denomination that will be joining together to show that we are united in our appreciation for the goodness that we all live in and the freedoms that we do have here. This year we're having a special focus, however, on those who don't yet have so much freedom, and we're looking at the immigrant experience and supporting immigrants to Fort Wayne, to the United States in general. So that goes on every year, and this year we have this special focus. And I've been contacted, can't even count anymore. I've only been here 3 months, and I've had several tour groups from different groups that, you know, come from the nursing students of PFW and schools and other people coming to learn about us and having dialogue and learning about the basic tenets of Judaism. There's lots of stuff that goes on. It's often very quiet. And sometimes that's the best way, when the lights aren't shining and people are just simply getting the chance to know each other. And one of the other great things we just had in, last week was Congregation Achdut V'Shalom has an annual corned beef sale. We had 1,500 people come and eat with us and purchase good old Jewish deli-style food. And there's people who come every year, and people came and we gave them tours of the congregation. So, you know, a simple thing is a sandwich opens up interfaith dialogue.
We've got a couple more minutes before we wrap up. Is there anything any of you would like to make sure we know?
Well, if I just may, I love hearing of these initiatives, and I'm a big fan. Amani will support as we can. Many of our staff members are immigrants and refugees, and I know we'll participate. I do agree with everything that's been said. I also want to add something else. You know, I started the evening with mentioning, you know, the sense of belonging and the question we all have. There are many, many ways in which we can feel like we belong here. One of them is, what does our leadership sound like, and what do they look like? So if they, more and more our leadership is diverse, and I'm talking about, you know, not just elected officials, but definitely elected officials, but also representatives of business enterprises. You know, the more diversity we see in a leading position, the more we as immigrants and refugees can feel like we're represented. And also, interfaith dialogue is so very important, and definitely there is a need for grassroots and grassroots, very successful initiatives that maybe don't need a huge spotlight, that are really genuine and honest. I also pay attention to what our leaders say, and they do make a difference, because when they open up the dialogue in a positive way, I think there's a lot of consequences to that, in good and bad. When our leaders fail to positively embrace religious, ethnic diversity, when they fail to recognize the positive impact of diversity in our community, many other people tend to be sort of feeling, how can I say, the hate is more likely to be expressed openly when they're individuals who are sort of not happy about the presence of immigrants and refugees. So yes, intimate conversations, yes, really true, honest conversations, and also public representation, public leadership comments that support diversity is so very important.
I would just add that one of my favorite stories from my tradition is when you read the Bible, the Hebrew Bible begins with the story of the creation of a human being. And there's only one person created, and then there are additional added. And our tradition teaches us that the reason there was only this common set of parents and only these two individuals that create all humanity is that none of us can say, my parent is better than yours, because we all come from the same source. And whether we're people of faith or people who are spiritual seekers or simply people who don't have that much thought on a daily basis about these bigger issues, the most important issue to remember is that we are really all one people. It doesn't matter what color our skin is, it doesn't matter what our faith traditions are. We are one humanity, and in order for us to survive together, we have to be together, we have to honor each other's humanity, and we have to strive to bring the best that we can of ourselves to the rest of the world and to our planet to save it and all of us.
I guess I would just like to end with, I've said this a couple times already, we have so much more in common than what divides us. And if we could just concentrate on that, as opposed to my belief is better, than my belief is more right, or you know, any of that kind of stuff. Whenever we tend to demonize somebody else or say that their beliefs or their religion or whatever it is incorrect or isn't good, you can pretty much bet that you haven't even begun to understand what that other person believes. So, you know, I agree with what the rabbi's saying is, you know, we need to be strive more towards unity, towards being one. And, you know, if we could just stop trying to necessarily convert people to our way of thinking and just understanding, I think we'll get along so much better. We'll appreciate each other so much more. And we'll be able to have those conversations. Instead of being afraid of the conversation around religion, how about being not afraid to just ask a question and then talk?
Thank you guys so much for coming tonight to our Issues and Ales event. Thank you to our three panelists for your wisdom and your insight. You were wonderful and informative, and I can speak for myself. I don't want to speak for our audience, but I feel hope and a better connection to my community because we've had this chat tonight over beers. Thank you all so much for joining us, and you can catch us again later on WBOI. Thank you.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to WBOI News Director Rebecca Green and panelists Joe Salem, Irina Paxia, and Rabbi Paula Jane Winnig for taking part in this conversation in our community. You can find other Issues and Ales conversations online at WBOI.org or wherever podcasts are found. Just look for WBOI Presents. And thank you to Lucas Norton for running sound at Welch's Ale House. Our music is by Mark Waldick and Noah Campodonico. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our WBOI intern is Brittany Smith. Until next time, thank you for listening.